Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. As you may know, because we've talked about this before and hopefully you've been with us before, this is a call-in program. And I want to remind you that the phone number is 781-3875. And we'd like you to be part of the discussion, and we encourage you to be a part of the discussion early in the program. We're going to talk today about a concept called real cost measures for cost of living, and we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. What I want to remind you about also is that our goal on Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. And Central Coast Voices wants to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how things that we may see as change are or are not positively affecting the ramifications of our society. Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. There is a full report that is put out by Action every 3 years. It's available at actionslo.org. It's an extensive report on the standard of living and many other factors in San Luis Obispo County. Today's program is a program I've really been excited to do for some time. As we've heard some things about it, we're going to talk about a concept called real cost measures, and the program really is a real cost measure that we want to look at. According to a recent study by the United Way of California, almost one in three San Luis Obispo County households are struggling to meet their basic needs. The report that they've put out, which is struggling to get by, is going to introduce a concept called real cost measures, which is a new tool to provide a more realistic picture of what poverty is, as opposed to just the federal poverty line and issues like that that have been worked with before. My guests today are Henry Gascon. He is the manager of programs and policy development for United Way of California. Henry's with us on the phone. And Rick London, who's the CEO of United Way of San Luis Obispo County, and Eddie Taylor, who is the CEO of United Way of Northern Santa Barbara County. Eddie and Rick have been with us on the program before. It's been a pleasure to work with them. I'm actually surprised, since I abused them so profusely last time they were here, that they've decided to come back. But I'm glad they're with us today. So, Henry, welcome to the program. I know you're online. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, perfectly. Okay, thank you.
Why don't we start with you, because I'd like to get an understanding for everyone and all of us as to what real cost measures are, because it's a different way of looking at poverty and what we look at is how people are living. So why don't we start with that?
Sure.
Can you give me the under 30-minute discussion of what real cost measures is?
Sure, I'd be more than happy to do that. The real cost measure is essentially a new poverty threshold that we've created for California. And it takes into account all the various basic needs of life, including the cost of housing, childcare, food, healthcare, transportation, and taxes, and everything else. And the reason why we created this is because the federal poverty level is really outdated. It's been created, the federal poverty level was created back in the middle of the 1960s, famously created by Molly Urshansky, who was a statistician at the Labor Department. And she based it based upon the price of three baskets of food, which was incredibly high back in the 1960s. So obviously the prices of goods and services have changed significantly, and the federal poverty level, all it has done is it's just adjusted for inflation every year since then. So in essence, it treats poverty in exactly the same way as it does in Mississippi, as it does in California. But we decided to go ahead and kind of take a brand new look at poverty in terms of looking at the very basic needs of life. So as you mentioned, we found that 31% of households in the Central Coast struggle to get by, and it's about 29% in San Luis Obispo County. One of the things that we did in our report was we created household budgets. So you can actually go ahead and select a county on our website and choose one of the various configurations from all the way from one adult to 12 adults in a household, and we can actually determine what it costs to get by. So, for example, if we take a look at San Luis Obispo, and if we just choose two adults, one infant, and one school-aged child, we see that it takes up to over $52,000 of income just to get by in life. And that's just the basic needs, a two-bedroom house, child care, food, health care, transportation, et cetera. And that's, so our real cost measure essentially is over 2 times higher than the federal poverty level.
Yeah, let me jump in with you a second, because I'm looking at the single page synopsis of San Luis County, and these are tremendously clear information. We also have one for Monterey and San Benito counties, which we'll get into, and Santa Barbara County we'll get into with Eddie. One of the things that jumped out at me was the concept of families that working families don't earn enough. There's this presumption that poverty in our society translates into people who don't have a decent job, as opposed to people who may have a decent job but can't get by based on the cost of living. One of the things that I looked at is when you talk about this family of four, the two adults, one infant, and one school-aged child, in order to meet the threshold of what is considered not being in poverty in San Luis Obispo County, there'd have to be 3 minimum wage jobs in that household.
Absolutely.
Okay, 3 full-time minimum wage jobs. They're not 3 full-time people working there, and we can't expect parents to raise their children and have 1.5 jobs or 2 jobs in a lot of cases. So this is – where was the data lacking before? When you did this study based upon this data – or this form of looking at data, did you also look at it as if you were grabbing the same data based upon the old federal standards of poverty to try and compare, I guess, how valid or invalid the previous way of looking at the data was?
Yeah, and in fact, the federal poverty level doesn't even include a lot of that data in terms of the basic cost of living. So we had to take a look at a whole bunch of different data sources, including data that's provided from the U.S. Census Bureau and California expenditure data in terms of all the basic expenditures that many households have to deal with. But you're right about the working poor, which is a real central focus of our report, is that we find about 9 in 10 households have at least one working adult in them. So they're not merely taking advantage of public assistance. Often these families are headed by somebody who has to work 2 or 3 minimum paid jobs, who have to travel long distances in order just to meet the basic needs of life. And that's one of the things that we find one of the misconceptions about poverty, is that they're not just taking advantage of public assistance and not working, is that we find a lot of the working poor really are working hard just to make the basic
needs. Okay, let me get Rick in the discussion here. And but Rick, as for those who may have just tuned in, Rick London, who's the executive director, probably CEO of the United Way of San Luis Obispo County. We don't call them executive directors anymore, do we? I guess.
Well, it depends. But basically, I get credit when things get wrong, and the great people I work with get credit when things go right.
Okay, and that's the way you intended it to be. Okay. Anyway, Henry brings up an interesting point, which I think for me, as I read a lot of your material, was that we're not talking about unemployed. Okay, we're not necessarily looking at a standard that's related to being unemployed, being homeless. We're really looking at whether or not people who are in jobs that may have minimum training or jobs that may have minimum income potential based upon the market are going to continue to struggle regardless of what they're doing, because the job market that they're in doesn't have prospects for them to go from a minimum wage job or even a $10 an hour job to a significantly higher wage in a county like this.
Well, there's actually a number of people who have higher education beyond high school who are also struggling to find head of household jobs. I think there's a limitation on head of household jobs and affordable housing that we're dealing with across the country. There's some areas that are more affordable, obviously, and that is helpful. But it's a structural issue, I think, in the sense of the way our economy has evolved, that there's so many decent paying jobs or head of household jobs to go around. So no matter how educated you are, the market is only, so there's only so much breadth to it. So we're seeing this in various places. There's a recent report that just came out about homelessness. We're seeing a lot more homelessness. It's becoming more difficult to make ends meet. What this report is, validates are the kind of programs that United Way of Northern Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo County are working on, in the sense of helping individuals achieve their potential, become reading literate, become financially literate, socially, emotionally literate. We have a hard time affecting head of household jobs and affordable housing, but we can help people better work within these conditions. I think that's what it's about. For me, this report is very appreciated because it demonstrates that a lot of great people are working very hard. I mean, we're gratified right now, and some people might not appreciate this, but the state of California just passed a earned income tax credit. What's so wonderful about the earned income tax credit is it helps people who are actually earning money. It gives them an extra boost. And I think when people see this report, they can see why, a program like that is so beneficial and powerful.
Yeah. I want to remind our listeners, we are talking today with some folks from United Way, both locally in our community and at the state level, about a concept and a way of looking at poverty and how we measure poverty, called real cost measures. We'll get into details about a report out that United Way of California has done that focuses on individual counties. There's some specific information about each of our counties, and also looks at the state as an overall issue. I want to remind you that this is a call-in program. You're welcome to be part of the discussion with observations, questions, or just a need for some clarification about something that is said. Our phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. This is Community Public Radio, KCBX. You're part of our community, and we would like to keep you in the discussion. So if you want to step into it, please do so. I want to make sure we get involved in this, but I want to just share, interesting, when I printed out the executive summary of your report, your full report is about 140 pages long. The executive summary is about 12 or 14 pages. I was actually struck by something that that is not significant from a data standpoint, but is significant, I think, from the fact that you, United Way, chose this to be something that would jump out at people. It's a quote from James Baldwin from 1960, and it says, "Anyone who has ever struggled with poverty knows how extremely expensive it is to be poor." And I think that that's probably one of the key factors of what we're looking at, and that is that it's a difficult, complex life for people who are struggling to get themselves out of poverty, even in a lot of cases when they're looking at a job market where they may have a very successful job in their field and in their level of discipline, but it's not enough to live on. So having said that, I'm going to give you one of the hard questions that I have in my mind today, and that is, you're with United Way of Northern Santa Barbara County, economic base that I would say is similar to San Luis Obispo County, but somewhat diametrically opposed to the other half of Santa Barbara County. And I think sometimes people believe that everybody in Santa Barbara County is wealthy. Everybody in Santa Barbara County is doing something very elaborate, very intricate, very involved. And I think sometimes people forget that Santa Barbara County has a very diverse economic base that some people don't pay attention to.
That's true. It's when you look at, and it's interesting to really dig into the data in this report. And with respect and apologies to Henry, In my mind, I refer to this report as Carmen because I need acronyms. Acronyms keep me focused. So, Henry, you have to live with it. So if you hear me refer to Carmen, I'm talking about the real cost measure.
Okay.
When we dig into that data, we can see that there are similarities between South County and North County, talking about Santa Barbara. But the difference is, as you dig really, really dig down into the data that Henry is and his team have been able to provide, and we look at the communities, you're right. Ours is an agricultural-based community, ag and retail. Okay, we're not creating high-paying jobs in ag and retail. We are creating jobs, but not high-paying jobs, as opposed to South County, where there are the tech and government jobs, you know, that are not as abundant as they used to be. And so more and more people are getting jobs that don't enable them to afford to live in South County. That's why we see an influx of people moving to North County and commuting to South County to work. So what Rick touched on is it's really is complicated. It's creating adequate paying jobs. It's creating adequate and affordable housing. It's about improving education outcomes and so many other aspects of life. And I don't know if it was Henry or Rick that touched on it, but when we talk about education, we look at the data around education, and I think it's more than two-thirds of the families in Santa Barbara County who live below the Carmen budget have less than a high school diploma. Am I right? You're looking at it. I'm not. So I think it's probably somewhere over here. At any rate, I think I'm close on that.
I'm looking at the San Luis County one here. There's the Santa Barbara County one.
Let's see. So, yeah, 68% have less than a high school diploma. Yeah. So when we look at things, you know, the way Rick and I operate our United Ways is, okay, let's look at what we can solve. Okay, let's not focus on the problem. The problem's there. Most of us know the problem is there. Most of us understand the problems. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on the solutions. What can we do together to make that better? And what we focus on in northern Santa Barbara County is literacy. It's education. Will that create higher paying jobs? Not necessarily, but when we bring the community together around the initiative we call WALI, the Workforce and Literacy Initiative, then we're getting a lot more buy-in from all sectors of the community. So we're literally bringing, you know, a catalyst forward to say, okay, we're going to focus on this issue. I think the real cost measure really paints the light for us, and I'm excited about in a couple of months, Henry will come up and we'll present this to the community. But when we present it, be clear, we will be presenting what we see as solutions as well.
That's very good. Henry, back to you for a second. As I look at the, to refresh your memory, the listening audience for this program is from the very edge of Santa Barbara County to the south, to about halfway to two-thirds through Monterey County.
Right.
And this is an area that's interesting in that when I look at the three-county report, or the three different counties, a separate report, parts of the report. By the way, your Monterey report includes San Benito County.
Right.
The figures are not very different.
Right.
So I realize you don't have a consolidated number for the four counties we're talking about specifically, but are we in an area that is struggling more with this than most of California?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad that you're talking about the geographic focus, and our poverty report actually goes within neighborhoods as well, in addition to looking at regions and at counties. So one of the areas that we looked at, of course, is the Central Coast, where we find about 31% of households struggle to get by. But we actually look at some very specific communities within both San Luis Obispo and within Santa Barbara counties. And just to kind of touch base upon the similarity that you brought in earlier with northern Santa Barbara and with San Luis Obispo, is that we find also in the coastal region of San Luis Obispo, we find about 31% of households struggling to get by, versus the eastern part of San Luis Obispo, where it's about 23%. So we're finding great disparities not only throughout California, but within counties themselves. And to speak more specifically about Santa Barbara, is you're right. There's certainly disparities there, where we find 38% of households in the community of Santa Maria and Orcutt struggle to get by. And compare that to kind of the very southern part of Santa Barbara County, which many consider to be the wealthy part, where only 27% struggle to get by. But in looking at a big statewide level is that we find statewide is, you know, San Luis Obispo and the Central Coast seems to be kind of on the average scale in terms of struggling to get by. But of the 58 most struggling neighborhoods in California that we looked at, we found that 41 of them are actually in Los Angeles County, which is the most populous county in California. And about a third of their population comprises the entire state data in terms of struggling to get by. But the Central Valley and the South L.A. portion of Los Angeles County are the neighborhoods that are particularly struggling.
When you look at counties like Santa Barbara, because I think it applies primarily as I look at Santa Barbara, but it applies in some parts of San Luis Obispo also. I need to give you an anecdotal example, because I happen to own a small rent, three-unit rental property in Atascadero. And when we are looking at one of those is a two-bedroom, the other two are small one-bedroom apartments. When we get people who are looking at those when we have a vacancy, what I get a lot of people doing is saying, well, I work in San Luis Obispo, or I work in even the Pismo Arroyo area, but I can't afford to live there. And one of the questions that we have to ask people as we realistically believe whether or not they're going to stick around for a while as a tenant is, have you thought about the extra expense that you've got to go through to drive up and down Cuesta Grade if you work in San Luis Obispo? And the answer we get is, have you looked at the cost of rental property in the city of San Luis Obispo? It's startling. And so that's the kind of, I think, the struggle that I'm sure that Eddie sees in Santa Barbara County, but we also see in San Luis Obispo County, and that is there are areas where you can afford to live, but you can't get a job, and areas where you have your employment and you'd like to live, but because of the nature of that community, it's too expensive to live there. Actually, Rick, why don't you jump in on this? Because this is something you probably see in San Luis County, of course.
Well, I think this report's so important because it reveals what I would suggest to be a structural deficit in our system. It's just becoming unaffordable. For example, I remember in the early 80s, there was the Tax Reform Act of 81, and there were some incentives that encouraged development. And what ended up happening was there was so much development and rent, the prices became so high, you couldn't get a mortgage low enough to where you would have the monthly payment to where it was affordable. And so that's why I say it was a structural deficit, and it became unrealistic. And I think that's what this is revealing to a large extent. But for me, I'm grateful for this report because we tend to demonize people who can't make ends meet. We tend to just not respect them, blame them like it's their fault. And I believe that our system is contributing to that. I mean, these people are working very hard to make ends meet. Some of them are working two jobs, and then you have to deal with a society that glamorizes things that we don't necessarily need, but people want to have. It connects to our self-esteem. It's quite a it's creating some conflict, and you know, it makes it very difficult for people to decide what to do. You know, a lot of these people, they don't go out to dinner. You know, they're making very tough choices about how to spend their money. The other thing I think is incredibly valuable about this report is that it's in a budget form. When we're in San Luis Obispo high schools teaching money talks or financial literacy, these young people today must know how to budget and understand what that means. And when I'm in the classrooms, I even make jokes. I say, we got to show our government how to live by a budget. Somebody's got to lead by example.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Henry, when your team devised real cost measure, what type? I don't want to. You know, I appreciate what you did, and I really think it's tremendously good information. I wasn't pleased with the numbers I see. It tells us that an awful lot of people are truly struggling, but I was very pleased as I read through the report that it's got clear information and a clear picture that you don't need to be an economist to understand. Did you look at, and how did you look at, whether or not your figures and your way of computing this are as realistic as you'd like them to be? Because you, of course, did this because the federal standard wasn't giving you the picture you wanted.
Right. So one of the things that our report does is it creates a very bare-bones budget in terms of life's very basic needs, all the way from housing, childcare, transportation, and taxes and everything else. But it doesn't really speak to all of the various discretionary costs that many households have to deal with each and every day, including buying school supplies for children, the cost of internet, which we think should be kind of considered kind of a basic need for everybody throughout the entire world, right? So we were just taking it kind of just the very basic needs of life, housing, two-bedroom house on average, food, health, child care, health care. What does that actually look like in terms of the basic needs? But if you were to incorporate all of those other factors, like property utilities, we think the cost might actually be a bit higher. And one of the things that we looked at specifically is the percentage of households who have to deal with a housing burden greater than 30%, is that overall, housing is incredibly high here in California. I think it's the third most expensive state in terms of housing after New Jersey and Hawaii. But we find 47% of households pay over 30% of their gross income on housing, which is just absolutely mind-boggling.
Well, as I'm looking at the figures for two adults and an infant and one school-aged child, which is the family cluster that you've used as an example. For San Luis Obispo County, it's saying that the housing would be $13,944.
That's on average.
My hunch is, I'll trust your figures. I think that's remarkably low. It may be the kind of housing that family is stuck with,
right?
But it's not the kind of housing that family with two children would like to have. If you have a 10-year-old, you probably don't want your 10-year-old to feel like they need to share their bedroom with the 10-month-old. And in a family with four people in it, the adults would like to have their own bedroom, so they have some of their own privacy and space. Is this housing that we look at not from a standpoint of what would be the best for the family, but just realistically the best they could get by with?
Yeah, and this is probably kind of the bottom line in terms of the price of housing. I think you're right. So one of the things that we look at housing specifically is that we look at HUD's fair market rent rates. But if you take a look at other data sources, some other expenditure data, I'm sure you're going to find that the average prices for many residences is much higher than that. So again, we just looked at a bare bones budget, but I think you're right in terms of we just looked at a two-bedroom housing example for two adults, one infant, one child. But depends on who you are. That we see many families too. Are merging into households together because another family member might not have enough to get by on their own. So those informal households, if you will, where households are doubling up, is that we find about 29% of those are struggling to get by, even when there's more than one income source in the household.
Mm-hmm. Eddie, why don't you had some concern about some of these numbers that you were. As we talk about them.
Well, the concern was, I don't think it's being made clear that when we talk about housing costs, it's not just rent. Housing costs, there's utilities, right? There are other aspects of housing. When we talk about transportation, it's not just the cost of gasoline to drive from Atascadero to Pismo. There's tire replacement. There's car repairs.
Insurance,
I don't even think that these numbers, and Henry, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe these numbers include actually the cost of purchasing a car.
So that's absolutely right.
So,
yeah. That's right. And this just includes the very bare bones in terms of, you know, public transportation. We look at transportation as well. So you're absolutely right. It doesn't even factor in utilities and other basic needs and other things that we would actually consider to be basic necessities in life.
So then when you look at the miscellaneous, okay, so Santa Barbara County, a family of four, two kids in the household, two working adults, $56,279 a year is what it takes to meet the struggling to get by budget. Hey, Henry, I did that pretty good, huh?
That's great.
I almost avoided Carmen, but better luck next time. And part of that is, okay, there's the miscellaneous. It's $4,000 a year. So $4,000 a year.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys good at math? Stay with me here. $4,000 a year in miscellaneous. Wow, that sounds like a lot of money. That's $333 a month. Do the math. Mm-hmm. Got it? Rick's good at this. All right, okay, now I got a cell phone. How much does a cell phone cost for the family these days?
Right.
What if you have a home phone? If you had a home phone, it's about the trade-offs, right? And so we make these decisions. If we're living in this situation, we have to make these decisions. And what are the things that get cut? What are the things that we don't do? Is it shoes for the kids? Is it food on the table? Is it medical care? Is it I'm sick, I have to see a doctor, I can't see a doctor? Is it savings for the future? Is it a college savings account for my children so that they can have a better life? Those are the things that are the trade-offs, and they're the ones that are the solutions that improve the quality of life so that when we talk about the problem, great, let's talk about the solution. How do we help folks save for the future? How do they understand what Rick's teaching in financial literacy? How do we get more people involved in literacy programs to improve their skills so that they can do get a higher-paying job?
I just want to say the fact is that this report is not exaggerating the problem. It's not being overstated.
Oh, no.
If anything, the points you're bringing up is that it's understated, if it's anything, and it's actually worse. And if you even think about, so if you say Central Coast, we've got 31% of households living below the real cost measure. What about the folks that are just above that percentage living one paycheck at a time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's probably a bigger issue. That's why I consider it a structural issue in how we've arranged the way to provide goods and services and for families to, pursue happiness.
Yeah. Let's get back to this in a second. I want to remind folks that this is Central Coast Voices. We're talking about a report and a concept put together by United Way of California called Real Cost Measure. And it's a fascinating way of looking at this. It's a distressing way of looking at this because it's talking to some extent about the fact that the picture is not as good as we'd like it to be for an awful lot of people, but we have to be realistic. We'd like you to be part of the discussion if you want to be. Our phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. I want to interject for a second because I think this comes up, and after the last time I had Rick and Eddie on the program, the whole United Way model of what they're spending their time on has changed. And so I guess I want to – Rick's elevator explanation of this is very good, and I'd like to jump in with that because I think for a lot of people that may not be familiar with what United Way is doing now, this is a different picture of what United Way has spent its time and efforts on. Can you share with us the shift that's made United Way over the last few years?
Historically, since 1887, when we got started by a rabbi, two ministers, and a priest, and Francis
and a woman.
Francis Weisbart Jacobs.
Didn't start at a bar, by the way.
Francis Weisbart Jacobs. We tended to be known as a safety net. Just pure, unadulterated charity. You know, we've evolved. There's 1,800 of us in 41 countries, and we're all focused on education, income, and health in one way or another. We're geographically and culturally unique, and our end game is we want youth achieving their potential. We want families financially stable. We want everybody healthy. What's really turning the course here is that we're thinking upstream. We're looking at root cause. Our society's really good about treating symptoms, but we're drowning in these symptoms. How you know, I started to call it CPR. We need to be living more compassionately, thinking more preventatively, and acting more responsibly. And that's upstream work. We tend to intervene. We're not very good at prevention. It's absolutely amazing. We're just not – we need to get better at prevention. Yeah.
We tend to be a reactive society.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's not really working anymore. And the real cost measure points out how many of these families, in order to make ends meet, there's a huge gap between – how much they're making and what those basic needs are. So we're getting subsidies from CalFresh or food stamps. We're getting subsidies from Medicaid. We're getting subsidies from the low income tax.
We're going to the food bank. Exactly. Yeah.
People are upset that people aren't self-sufficient. You know, why aren't they doing this? You know, why aren't they being more self-sufficient? And we're trying to point out that that's what this report's pointing
out. Let's go. Henry, hold on. We've got some incoming calls, Henry, so hold on. I think you can hear these when they come in. So, okay, Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Go ahead.
My name is Bill Parenti. I'm a volunteer with the Tescadero Loaves and Fishes, and we've had a long-time mutually supportive relationship with United Way. My question perhaps takes us off in a little bit of a different direction, but it is, what can we do with these findings other than sort of recognize the situation? I mean, for example, can we move to have local governments adopt them as new guidelines? I don't think we can move the federal government. But at the risk of being a little bit impertinent, Rick, should United Way adopt them as new criteria for awarding grants and use these guidelines, these findings, as a criteria for who is admitted to your education and other programs?
Well, I think, you know, this report just came out. And thanks for calling in, Bill. This report just came out. Our board of directors is reviewing it. In my mind, in the work I've been doing, you know, for the last 16, 17 years, I believe we need to help people become more self-sufficient, self-reliant, but it's difficult for United Way to do this all by ourselves. Of course, mm-hmm. There's a lot of other people and agencies that are involved, including our local governments. I think are doing the best they can. You know, I just want to say I think our local governments do very well living within their budget. It's the federal government that I was referring to earlier. But how do you like the report, for instance, in San Luis Obispo County? It's 53% of people with less than a high school education that are living below the real cost measure. Single mothers, 66% living below the real cost measure. You know, there's things that we can do to help people, climb a little bit higher. And how do we do that? And then I also think that there's things our society has to reevaluate in how we're providing goods and services. It's not – I don't know how fair it is or – you know, that's why I keep saying there's a structural issue. And, you know, it's things like the real cost measure that I think brings that to light as a way of not demonizing the working poor.
Yeah, Bill, let me jump in for a second. This is Fred again. The United Way is doing a public presentation next Tuesday, and they're also doing a presentation, I guess, on Monday afternoon. You're doing some kind of presentation for some government officials.
Just actually, yes, we're going to be at the public library next Tuesday. Hey, Fred, thanks for reminding me.
Okay.
Next Tuesday at 12 o'clock, from 12 to 1, Henry and other staff from United Way of California are going to be doing a presentation at the San Luis Obispo County Public Library. So you're welcome to come. You can go to United Way.
We will definitely have a representative at that meeting. Another board member and I sort of split these duties up. He couldn't listen to the program today, and I can't go to the presentation. But we will definitely have a representative there.
Very good.
I appreciate and understand that certainly United Way can't do all this on its own. And I would support the view that the county of San Luis Obispo has continued its level of support for our operations, while the federal support has continued to decline over the last 3 years at a minimum.
Yes.
So I, at the risk of sounding stubborn, will say I will continue to think about a way that we might work to present these findings more as guidelines for the future, again, in terms of educating people like you're doing, Rick, and maybe they're the newer admitting criteria, if you want to call them that.
Yeah. Yes.
So I appreciate your response, and I appreciate your bearing with me. It's not my intent to monopolize the program, but I will sign off and turn my radio back on.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks,
appreciate
Bill.
It. Okay. Alrighty. Also, let's see. Jerry, are you there?
Sorry. Yes,
thanks for waiting so long. You're on the air. Just step into the dialogue.
Okay. My concern is for individual single people. How are they supposed to pay rent? I base my theory on most landlords are going on a double income household. And as a single individual, to pay $1,200 a month rent is too astronomical. That's even above what my Social Security pays. As an elderly.
Okay. Yeah, it's a very good point. Gentlemen, you want to jump in with the concept? We've talked a lot about families and not about individuals.
Fred, are you the one who said you have apartment units in Atascadero?
I own three units in Atascadero.
Okay. Now, for the one bedroom, could a single person afford living there?
The rent that my current one bedroom units rent for is $745 a month. I will tell you, though, that is rent at about $150 below market.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we generally have somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 people who apply every time we have a vacancy.
20 to 30. Yeah. I mean, anything under 750 for a studio is an opportunity almost. You just, for a single person, it's been like that my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I'm, 63. Okay. I'm talking 45 years ago.
Right? Let me have Eddie jump into this conversation.
Thanks, Fred. Two things. Jerry's point validates the report. If you look at the report, I'm looking at Santa Barbara numbers, and I know they're very similar in San Luis Obispo. Housing costs for one adult. $12,800 a year. Housing costs for two adults is not even $2,000 a year more. So Jerry's point is very valid and is validating the report. But I'd like to ask Henry to speak to the component of the struggling to get by report that incorporates the Elder Index, because that is it was amazing to me to see that the data correlates pretty evenly between the elders' struggles to get by and not elders' struggles to get by.
And Eddie, you're absolutely right, and thank you for saying that. So one of the things that we did as well is that we adopted the Elder Index that was originally developed by UCLA. And by incorporating that into our report is that we found that also 31% of seniors struggle to get by throughout the entire state. So, we often talk about Social Security is probably one of the most successful anti-poverty programs we've ever had, and that's certainly true. But we also find that seniors still can't afford to meet the basic needs of life in terms of housing, transportation, healthcare, so on and so forth. And I think the needs of seniors are very distinct because many of them need to go back into the labor force. And often there's often a mismatch of what their skill sets are versus the opportunities that are available. And quite frankly, they also experience age discrimination, which hurts their chances even more. One of the callers was talking about the challenges facing single individuals, and that's certainly true, that more than ever we're seeing many kids graduating out of college come back home to live with their parents simply because they can't meet the basic needs of life on their own. So not only are the low-income populations being squeezed, but we're finding a large segment of the middle class is being squeezed too. We're also big champions of the United Way are big champions of the Human Development Report, and we've been working with Measure of America in New York to create the California Human Development Index. And in the last report, they found that, you know, since 1985, California's GDP has increased 123%, but the average household income for the average Californian has only increased by 7% during that same amount of time. So we've seen wages for most Californians, and for most people nationally, remain largely relatively flat, while the prices of goods and services continue to increase, ensuring that many people are continuing to be squeezed out.
Yeah. Henry, one of the things that I think, because we had a caller call in and leave some questions with our producer, there's a disproportionate amount of the population that provides a need for a lot of families. Childcare is the key factor, and that becomes a population that is primarily it's disproportionately women in those jobs, and it's a disproportionately low income. So I'm wondering if there's looking at all about the fact that some of the things that are most needed by families that are poor are provided by people who are working in a job that basically makes them poor too.
Actually, Henry, let me just add on to that also, that a lot of in households, somebody instead of paying somebody to take care of their children and going and making a minimum wage job, they are staying home and taking care of their children rather than going and making money and then paying somebody else to take care of their children. That's not necessarily incorporated into this report as part of working.
Yeah. So in terms of the cost of childcare, is that we only looked at the cost of licensed year-round childcare facilities. So in San Luis Obispo, for example, we found that the average childcare cost is about $10,500. But in reality is that many low-income households can't even afford that. So you're right, Rick, is that many of them, and especially single mothers, you know, choose to go ahead and stay as home as much as possible to raise their kids. But, many of these families are dependent upon other family members to take care of their kids and even a social network beyond that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, childcare is incredibly expensive. In fact, we find it to be the second most expensive immediately after housing.
Yeah, actually, the picture you just drew of childcare cost basically would translate into a single parent having a childcare cost that would eat up more than 50% of a minimum wage income, of a pre-tax
Absolutely.
Minimum wage income.
Right. Correct.
I'm wondering how many people have to look at the fact of there's two of us in a household and we can't afford for us both to work.
Yeah, we're finding that not only low-income populations are struggling with that issue, but many within the middle class are certainly figuring out that issue. In terms of two full-time incomes, including with the expensive cost of childcare, it's a squeeze for many families.
I have a little, just a statistic, 47%. It's amazing nationally, though, similar to 47% of households are paying more than 30% of their income to housing. But 47% of Americans do not have $400 in savings. So their credit cards are maxed out. They can't borrow any more money, and they don't have, you know, a rainy day fund of $400. So that's why I say there's a structural issue here. In addition to maybe people are spending too much money on luxury items or on non-necessities, while our culture bombards us with that we, you know, need to have these things in order to have self-esteem, there's a structural issue, a battle going on that I hope this report helps encourage a conversation about it.
Yeah. Henry, you mentioned earlier in the program about the fact that a lot of the transportation costs are based upon assuming people are using public transportation because you flat out can't afford to own a car based upon
Right.
some of these numbers. It's a struggle we have on the Central Coast. I think we have to look at more, and that is on from San Benito County to the Ventura County, Santa Barbara County border. There is not a tremendously effective public transportation system. City of Santa Barbara's got a good system. Monterey County has a reasonably good countywide system, but it's really tough to get around and support a job in a lot of the areas of these counties with regard to public transportation. It's light rail is a luxury we'll never be able to afford on the Central Coast.
Yeah, and that reality is not only true in the Central Coast, but it's also true throughout the entire California, is that I think California has the highest proportion of those who have to travel more than 60 minutes to get to their job. And it's incredibly difficult for low-income families who, you know, are struggling to you know, take care of their children, but they also have to travel long distances. And in many respects, they travel to different jobs each and every day. And that's easily, for many households, that could be 2 to 3 hours on the road each and every day. And that only it not only places a financial burden on these families, but also a social one, just in terms of being able to spend quality time with them and each other.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time. I want to give everybody a chance to have their last word, because if I don't give Rick the last word, he'll just kick me under the table for most of the next hour anyway. But, Eddie, why don't we start with you? You know, from a perspective in Northern Santa Barbara County, what do you want to make sure that we don't forget?
Well, I just want to start by saying I'm glad he's way over there on that side of the table. I don't want Henry to kick me, and he's on the other end of that microphone.
Okay.
It always occurs to me that, you know, what we talk about is solutions. Okay, so I'm just going to throw this out on the table for you. Y'all can run with it or not. What if we spent $68 billion improving our mass transit opportunities where transportation is needed? Just a what if. You consider the answers. But there, you know, we know what the problems are. Again, we know the problems are there. What always occurs to me in these situations, Fred, is if one-third of your family, you got a family with 50 people in it.
Okay.
If one-third of your family was really ill and had to go to the hospital, would you think there was an epidemic?
Yeah.
You would.
Oh, absolutely.
If one-third of your workforce was out, would you think there was an epidemic?
Yes.
If one-third of your student population couldn't read a grade level, would you think that was an epidemic?
Absolutely.
Actually, I would think that was improvement. That's a reality.
Okay.
But the point is, we have a third of our population who can't afford the basics of life. Or just beyond the basics of life. And Rick made a really valid point that, you know, what is the percentage of folks who are living just above this threshold, who live from paycheck to paycheck but don't have that $400 when a tire blows out and they got to buy a set of tires for their car? We have to look at this as it's an epidemic. And when we do look at epidemics, we come away with solutions. That's what we do.
All right, so we'll have to leave it with that and let Henry have his last word. Henry, are you
sure?
Okay?
I'm here.
Go ahead. Jump in.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we can do is continue to focus education beyond high school. And, you know, I've applaud the work that Rick and Eddie are doing in their local communities to improve literacy rates. But we also find that California has the second highest rate of people without a high school diploma. It's about 18.5%, according to the latest California Human Development Report, and that's less than 1% from the national leader in Texas. So I think it's important for us to continue to emphasize how important education is, especially to our young people who are growing up, and who often, many of whom, have not even been exposed to a college campus, right? In terms of telling them that the higher that they're able to achieve with their education, not only in terms of a bachelor's degree, but also with a graduate degree, the more successful they're likely to be in life. And obviously, you know, there's many sacrifices that many families will have to do in order to make that happen, especially with the incredibly high cost of student loans. But it's absolutely worth it, is that if you continue to focus on your education, your opportunities could be really limitless.
Thank you. That's a very good point to leave with. And Rick, you sort of get the last word, because if you don't, I hear about it for weeks.
So thanks, Fred, for letting us participate today. I really appreciate it. It's nice to be with Henry and Eddie, two of my favorite people, besides Fred. I just want to say our systems are very stressed right now. United Way talks about living united. We're very good about living united within systems, but our systems are not very good about living united. We have groups of people, groups of organizations that are very good about living united within their organization, intra, within their organizations, but we're not very good about having organizations live united. And I think that's it's causing a lot of stress, and there's structural deficits in our system, and we really need to start taking a realistic look at it. And that I would welcome people to come to the Slo County Public Library next Tuesday, November 24th. We'll be there. Doors open at 11:45. Henry and Pete Monzo, the president of United Ways of California, will be there. And we're going to more detail about the report. And it's an opportunity just to take a realistic view of what's going on in our county. And you can also go to UnitedWaySLO.org, and you'll see the report mentioned there, and you can find out about the presentation on Tuesday and even register there if you would like to.
Is there a link on the local United Way website to get the whole report?
Yes.
Okay, because it's a free report that's available. It's a downloadable PDF. It's about 130 pages. It's a very, very informative report, and I think people should download it when they can.
Yeah, and it's worth reading the executive summary.
Yeah, right.
Okay. What you guys do is amazing. It's and I when Rick first mentioned to me that this report was coming out, and you explained real cost measures to me briefly one day in a way that made perfect sense. In fact, I couldn't remember what it was, but or I didn't understand it as clearly as I should. When I read through the report, I got a better understanding of it. I think it's a very good chance for us to look at poverty. We're not looking at poverty in a different way. We're looking at poverty in a more realistic way. So I think what you're doing is terrific, and I thank you for that. I want to remind folks that if you just happen to tune in, you missed a great program. But if you listen on a regular basis, you also know that this is available as a program you can listen to on the kcbx.org website. It's archived for quite some time and is readily available to listen to or to download if you missed any part of the program. And I'll get into some contact information in a little bit. This has been Central Coast Voices. I'm glad you're with us today. This is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, which is a project, as I've told you before, the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. Next week is Thanksgiving, and we'll be taking the holiday off. I'll be back with you in 2 weeks, and I'm going to have what I think will be a very fascinating program. We're going to talk to some mental health professionals about a program which is called Community Gatekeepers and a training program related to that, which deals especially with mental health issues focused primarily on the LGBT community of elderly. We forget about the fact that the LGBT community is very much in the forefront of the news and happenings in the world, but there are people who have been involved in that community who are now getting on in years, and how they function in society is an important factor also. Chris Kington Barker will be back in 3 weeks. Remind you that this is supported by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX. And you can get a hold of us at voices@kcbx.org. And we are underwritten by Joan Gillard Sargent, and we thank her. And thank you to my guests today, which are Henry Gaskin, Eddie Taylor, and Rick London. And this has been Central Coast Voices.